It was Valentine's Day in 2018 when a gunman killed 14 students and 3 staff members at the Marjory Stoneman Douglas High School in Parkland, Florida. In Kim Snyder's new documentary, Us Kids, we hear how just a week earlier, some of the seniors at the school had just learned about the NRA and the AP government class. And then days later, a group of these students put themselves in the center of one of the most heated debates in American culture. Snyder follows these students as they start speaking out against gun violence. They hold rallies and marches. They make media appearances. As one senior says in the film, "Before all of this, we were normal-ass kids doing normal-ass things." The film really is just the voices of these young people who describe the shooting as terrifying, of course, a moment of confusion, but also a moment of clarity. In the documentary, it's described as if a switch was turned on for some of these young people, and they had to figure out how to react, what they could do or say that would be different, and what might actually make a difference this time. This is Radio West. I'm Doug Fabrizio. Today in the program, we're beginning our coverage of this year's Sundance Film Festival, which got underway late last week. We're talking about Us Kids with Kim Snyder, who won a Peabody Award for her 2016 film Newtown, about the school shooting at the Sandy Hook Elementary School. Snyder joined us recently for a conversation in front of a live audience at the Utah Olympic Park in Park City. I guess it's kind of remarkable, as I understand it anyway, that you were in Florida on February 14th of 2018, the day of the shooting. Can I get you to just talk about how you reacted to that and what difference it made that you were, I guess, sort of close to that horrible thing?
It was a strange thing in that we had done our film Newtown 4 years prior, and I thought I was kind of done, honestly, with gun violence issue for the time being. And then, sadly, there was Pulse and there was Vegas and there were these other shootings, and I was actually pursuing a completely different project, coincidentally, in Florida. And I was in Tallahassee and was with the mayor of that city when we learned that the shooting had happened. And days later, busloads of kids came from Marjory Stoneman Douglas and appeared on the steps of the Capitol demanding change of the governor, Rick Scott, at the time. And so there I was with a camera on this other project, and thought, you know, I guess I'm supposed to be doing this. So that's when it started.
As I mentioned, you made a film called Newtown about the shooting in Sandy Hook, 2012. You said you didn't expect to make another film about gun violence, and I hate to say it this way because it sounds so kind of abrupt, but this kind of thing tragically happens all the time in this country now. So what was it about this particular incident that made you think you needed to do another film? What was it, just that you happened to be there? Was it circumstance, or was there something else?
No, it wasn't just that. There was that odd karma that I was there. But after Newtown, the one thing I couldn't let go of that I felt, you know, that film we felt was really a look at, you know, a treatise on collective grief, yeah, and what a town looks like and the ripple effects. And there was a story I could never really tell because they were first graders. You know, we focused a lot on the parents in that town. And it was the 12, well, many first graders that were in that school, but the 12 who escaped when the shooter's gun jammed, and not before seeing all their friends murdered. And I got to know those people. They protected the identities of those kids. Mm. But, you know, you think, well, maybe years from now, that's a story that needs to be told when these kids grow up. And those first graders, the trauma, and it just made me think about traumatized youth and how many youth in inner cities everywhere, and that we're really not focusing on the cost of that and the fallout. So I couldn't let go of that, and I was, like, pursuing a VR project. I was thinking about it. And then Parkland happened, and then these kids came. And then those first graders were like middle schoolers by then. And so there was this moment. That's what really, I think, set me off, was to try to weave a story that recognized a nation of traumatized youth that were trying to convey their rage, their fear, and they were ready to do something with that. And I think Parkland was a catalyst that kind of, you know, the story then became trauma mixed with activism.
Yeah. I have to say, I think I was thinking about both of those themes as I was sort of puzzling about what is the main theme here. And part of me thought, well, gosh, this is about what young people can teach us about activism and civil discourse. Like, that's part of it. But then I realized it's probably more about trauma, right? Like, the arc of trauma. Because I have to say, we see these young people go through what seems like an arc. There's that kind of anguish and anger, and then it turns into something else. And it was interesting to see, that was my sense of it, that that's what this film is about. It's about the effect of trauma.
It really was intended to be, more than anything, a coming-of-age story. Hmm. But a coming-of-age of a generation, this age of living against the backdrop of this horror that keeps repeating. And so the activism piece, if you will, really, to me, I guess, even though it was so different, does harken back to the 60s in the sense of movement building, that it's a movement born out of trauma, of seeing friends die. You know, as David says at one point, seeing friends, you know, it was seeing those bodies come back in caskets that, you know, not to say that other movements aren't born of that, but I think there was that visceral honoring their friends and avenging their deaths in a way.
Let's talk about Sam Fuentes. She was shot that day.
I remember literally everything that happened to a team. I remember things that I was saying. I remember things that I was thinking. I was thinking about Nick, and I was thinking about how he was dead, and I was thinking about how he didn't have a pulse. I was thinking about how we were going to get out, if he was going to come back. Was I going to die?
Where does she fit in the scheme of things? She's a really important part of the story.
Well, when I met Sam, I mean, admittedly, Sam reminds me a little bit of who I was as a kid with that age. She, you know, plays music, and she's trying to figure out her way in the world. And she was very curious. She told me she'd always been curious about the Holocaust and took Holocaust studies. She's Latina. She's a single mom. And unfortunately, it was her Holocaust studies class that was one of the classrooms targeted, and she saw one of her dear friends, Nick Dwarrett, killed before her. So Sam, in the trajectory of the film, is really trying to work through severe PTSD. And I think what I see in Sam and learn every day is I've just never seen a human being with that much resilience. It feels like a cliche to say, but she just keeps getting back up, and the courage and the strength and the innocence, it just it's inspiring, it's heartbreaking, and she's just completely lovable.
She says something interesting in the film I wanted to ask you about. She says that there was a time when she didn't really want to acknowledge that this had happened.
At first, I didn't want to acknowledge what had happened to me. But there was this part of me that kept wanting to, like, say it over and over and over and again. But not because I wanted it to feel real, but because I wanted to feel less real. To a point where it becomes a story, opposed to, like, my life.
What is she getting at there, do you think?
Every time I watch the cut, I hear that and think about it. And I think, I'm not exactly sure, but I think I know. And I think that there is this examination of trauma that we're able to do through Sam, of what trauma looks like.
Yeah.
And there's a repetitive quality. There's a wanting to let go and put it in a box and cast it off somewhere. There's denial, but there's also obsession and replaying. And I think the story, I think that is something that I learned through Newtown, too. If it's done in a certain way, there is something that compels some of these people to survivors to repeat the story as if at a certain point by saying it enough, they can cast it out.
Tell us about Emma Gonzalez. And I guess this is the question. Can you explain how it is that this young lady is so powerfully charismatic? She seems just remarkable.
She is. She is. A couple of people who know her well early on told me she's like a unicorn. She's just a force of nature. She, to me, when she got up, as you described, several days later with her AP government notes in hand and went with her own written speech. And by the way, the title Us Kids comes from her mouth. It's the beginning of the sentence where this famous We Call BS starts with, and us kids.
Yeah.
So that was
I actually want to play this moment if we can.
Oh, sure.
Because I think that, so this is just 3 days after the shooting. And Emma, as you say, is delivering this incredibly powerful and angry speech at this gun control rally. And the theme of it, it almost becomes a meme. It really catches hold. At this point in the film, Sam is talking about seeing Emma actually make this speech and how things seemed to change.
The people in the government who were voted into power are lying to us. And us kids seem to be the only ones who notice and are prepared to call BS.
It was a moment of just, like, confusion and then a moment of complete clarity.
Funded by the NRA, telling us nothing could have ever been done to prevent this. We call BS! They say that tougher gun laws do not decrease gun violence. We call BS!
The tears, the runniness in her eyes, the pinkness in her face. I could feel her through the screen.
We call BS!
In that moment, it felt like a switch was turned into her. And it was electrifying. She was on fire.
That us kids don't know what we're talking about, that we're too young to understand how the government works. We call BS! If you agree, register to vote, contact your local Congress people, give them a piece of your mind.
And I remember just like looking up to her and thinking like, wow, I can do that.
I mean, she had no experience, or not much anyway, before that. And here she is giving this powerful sort of call and response speech, and she's composed. It was amazing, I have to say.
It is, and she does have the charisma of someone that you watch and think, this is a living historic figure.
Yeah,
these are people who emerge in the pages of our history books that have something very special. And the clip that you just played, of course, when we hear Sam, she is describing that from her hospital bed days after the shooting, of seeing her classmate, who she knew, they weren't best friends, but she knew and respected Emma, and sees her on television giving this speech. And I think in that moment, I just got that small chill. Sam becomes one of hundreds of thousands of kids through social media and YouTube who say, I could do that. So for me, you know, she uses the words on fire. Emma is the match.
There's a, in the film, one of the student activists, Jackie, talks about how when she first goes to her friend's house and they're talking about, what are we going to do? We need to organize something. We need to do something. And she talks about how her father didn't want her to go. And she says he didn't understand that her grieving process was to do something. Talk a little bit about that, if you would, because I think Jackie's a really interesting figure too. She talks about her father being this kind of conservative guy, this, you know, Trump supporter, didn't have any clue about what she was doing and was confused about it.
Yeah, I felt with a lot of these kids, you know, what I also remembered about that age, we've all been that age, is grieving looks different. Trauma looks different than it does when you're older. It feels different and you react differently. Sometimes you hide it. and go out and you're with your friends and you're just, you know, not. But I think, you know, there was an off-camera conversation with Emma once where she said something to the effect of, you know, I don't want pictures of my dead friends. I want to act to honor them. I want to do things. And so it's this, and I think it's also part of a way of compartmentalizing and denying, too, is, and we all know that, you know, get busy. And so they get busy in the best of ways.
One of the things that I think may grab people right away is just how astute and savvy these young people were about the public and about the political dimensions to all of this. Emma talks about, there's this moment where she talks about, I mean, she knows nothing, you would think, about how to do something like this. And she talks about connecting, I mean, she's a senior in high school. She talks about connecting the trauma to politics, connecting the trauma to the systemic problem. And I wanted to, is she uncommon? Or are young people these days, because they're in this sort of social media milieu, that they are more savvy about this stuff?
I think about that a lot because I wonder, I think that this generation, that generation, you know, it gets a lot of bad rep, right? You know, yeah. I mean, it's like all of the negative parts of what social media, loss of intimacy, they, you know, date online and don't know each other, all those things. But I really learned so much and came out of it in awe thinking they are smarter. You know, they just are so literally postmodern in that they can just grab. I mean, Emma will, in the same like 40 seconds, reference three TV shows, a movie, three bills. They just mash everything together. And if they have a great intellect and they're creative, I think that's what it comes out of, where you're, it's like, it's watching, I would say to my producing partners all the time, it's like watching a pinball machine, you know, where you're just, you know, that's the way they work. And sometimes it can feel like ADD, and sometimes, and most of the times it just looks like brilliance.
I think what's important about that is that the students, and this is an important theme in the film, they were fed up. And they thought that they could come up with something new, a new approach to all of this. Let me play another moment from the film. We're going to hear the students, David Hogg here, Cameron Caskey, and Emma Gonzalez.
We've seen a government shutdown. We've seen tax reform, but nothing to save our children's lives. Are you kidding me?
We know how this is going to end up. We know that the politicians are going to say thoughts and prayers. They're going to say those words, and that's all they're going to do.
Thoughts and prayers.
In our prayers.
In our prayers.
We don't need politics right now.
It's not the time to jump to some conclusion.
All four bills on gun control failed.
We said, it's always the same shit. So what if we got to change it this time? So when people hear Parkland, Florida, they don't think that's that city where the school got shot up and then everybody cried and hid in their houses for a year. People think Parkland, Florida, that's the city where the school got shot up. And then, for lack of more eloquent words, shit went down.
Students are headed to their state.
What does he mean? And what do they mean, all of that? That what if we could change it? What are they imagining, do you think, at that stage?
They are looking at, they're just in disbelief, as many of us are, that so little has gotten done when these repeated shootings and the amount of gun violence. And he's saying, you know, what if we got to change it, and what if we really just got really ballsy and just didn't take no for an answer, and they find the most clever ways of affecting things that honestly, it's not like there weren't amazing strides. I mean, in the last 20 years, so much of this movement has been built just like so many other movements. You had Stonewall long before, yeah, you know, you got to where you got to with same-sex marriage. But I think here there are these watershed moments, and I think that it was built on survivor communities and so much work. But they did affect more and get more done with corporations where it really counted, pulling their money out of the NRA, I hope it's not a spoiler, but more than 130 state gun safety laws have been passed since they started this. They have more than 300 chapters. I mean, the hope that you get every time people say, you know, they feel demoralized, I just feel so privileged to have hung out with them and seen what they actually got done.
That's Kim Snyder. Her documentary, Us Kids, follows a group of students turned activists from Parkland, Florida's Stoneman Douglas High School. The film is an official selection of the U.S. documentary competition at this year's Sundance Film Festival. We'll take a break and come back in a moment. You're listening to Radio West.
What happens when a Mormon, a Muslim, and a rabbi walk into a bar? Join us at the Preach Podcast live show to find out. Special guests include comedian Stacey Harkey from JK Studios, co-founders of The Emerald Project, and a millennial rabbi. Plus live music and limited edition Preach swag. Preach Podcast Live is January 30th at the State Room in Salt Lake City. Tickets and info at preachpod.org/live.
This is Radio West. I'm Doug Fabrizio. Today in the program, we're beginning our week-long coverage of the documentaries in the Sundance Film Festival this year. Today's conversation is about filmmaker Kim Snyder's documentary, Us Kids. It's the story of the students at Stoneman Douglas High School who survived the mass shooting there 2 years ago. It's about their remarkable gifts of organizing and making their case for gun legislation, but it's also about the effects of trauma. Recently, Kim Snyder joined us for a conversation in front of a live audience in Park City.
Tell us about Cameron Caskey. All of the characters are remarkable in their own way. Cameron sort of filters these experiences through his sort of the philosophy of comic books, I guess.
Mm-hmm. Cameron's another incredibly charismatic teenager, smart as a whip, and he's incredibly entertaining, but he does refer a lot to, you know, he spent a lot of his younger years working in his beloved comic book store, and there's a lot of analogies. But for me, there were too, because I didn't want to simply glorify these kids. You know, in the beginning, I was sort of afraid of that. But in essence, it is the prototypical superhero journey that they go on.
Yeah,
you know, I thought about, you know, think about Batman. I mean, I just saw the Joker, and it's like he sees his parents get murdered in front of him, and then he sets out for the rest of his life to avenge their deaths. And it's they're reluctant heroes. They didn't ask for celebrity. They didn't, and they won't relent. So Cameron kind of embodies that, but he's also a really sensitive kid who, you know, part of what we learn in the film is that it really took its toll.
Yeah. And they all make mistakes early on. That's another thing, as I mentioned, that kind of arc of what they're learning along the way. In fact, let me ask you about one of the first lessons it seems like they learned. And that is how they dealt with media coverage. The film seems to be in some ways kind of a critique about the way these stories get covered. Is that fair to say? Or at least an observation about the way these kinds of stories get covered?
Well, yes, and I think there's a larger kind of cynicism about traditional media, mm-hmm. And the way things work in this country in fast and quick cycles and then move on. So this idea of we're not going to be the crying, you know, we're not going to just be the crying mom town. They don't like the way that these tragedies are focused upon for a very short period of time, and then we forget about them and move on, and the pattern.
Cameron says in the early days they were being passed around like an STD, like the kids were being like used by the... Which shows you how funny he is. And Emma says this thing in the film that she says she can feel the media wanting something from you. What is she sensing about her experience dealing with the media? What is she noticing there, do you think?
She, you know, it's interesting. She reacted, you know, they reacted to, they were very clear about this is not blue or red.
Yeah.
They're sick of that. She reacts to being fetishized,
yeah.
You know, that there's sort of, whether it be the liberal side of things or the counter-protesters or the ultra, you know, conservative gun rights people, all of it. And, you know, so the media wanting her, it was just a feeling of, we will not be owned and we will not be manipulated. And we need to be respected. We may be kids, but we know what we're doing and we're not going to be, yeah, we're not going to be manipulated.
Yeah. I want to actually play another moment from the film that sort of gets at this. This is Emma, again, from the documentary Us Kids.
All these photographers screaming at us, why aren't you smiling? Why aren't you smiling? You can feel them wanting something from you. Like with 60 Minutes, I had a 5-hour interview with them, and I was saying really smart stuff, and all they took was when I was like, I don't know if I deserve to go to college. I had so many good arguments. We f***ed up interacting with them like that, not understanding where we could say no and where we could say yes. CNN, they were like, okay, give us like a bunch of questions that you want to ask.
We're here tonight to facilitate your desire to speak directly to your leaders.
What they were actually doing was picking the questions that were the least confrontational. And Cameron went off script.
Senator Rubio, can you tell me right now that you will not accept a single donation from the NRA in the future?
What do you figure they learned from that experience? Because it seems like every step of the way, that's what the film takes us through. They sort of blow it or overreact or get a little too angry or get manipulated, and then they learn and they move on, and then they learn and they move on.
Yeah, one of the things Cameron makes clear is that in the beginning, there's this sense of, which I understand, there's this anger at the older generation of, you know, you messed up and move over. We know how to do social media. We've got this. And both he and David make it really clear off camera and on to me later that they need the wisdom. You know, they'll say, we need your wisdom. We need us standing, you standing beside. You know, they also really react poorly to this idea of, you know, go kids, go. You know, go and save the world. It's like we all have to do it. So I think that's one of the things they learn, is that they become very inclusive, and not just in terms of diversity and their friends in inner cities, but with age, with everybody.
Yeah. Well, with different political persuasions too, which mm-hmm. we'll get to here in a second. So their first venture, really their sort of first activist adventure, is the March for Our Lives, March of 2018. And then I wanted to ask you about a particular moment, and this happens a few times, and I hope I'm not giving too much away, but Sam Fuentes, whom we talked about a moment ago, she's asked to speak, and she has this kind of visceral, physical reaction. Can you say something about that?
Yeah, I think we were just talking about it today, that she, and remembering that, It's the denial that it's the stoicism of I'm okay. You know, I don't want to think about this. I don't want it to have happened. I'm a normal kid, and the effects of the PTSD are very profound, and they bite her. You know, at times, and it's hard to know when the triggers are coming or what they're can be. It could be a chocolate-covered strawberry at a dinner that she remembers passing out on Valentine's Day just before it happened. So I think they never know necessarily, and Cameron talks about that too, that suddenly he could find himself in a puddle of tears and not. I mean, but that's true for all of us who've been through trauma or loss. And they're learning that. They're learning that early.
Part of the film is that we go along with them on this extraordinary 50-city tour in the summer to go and meet other communities and talk. And it just seemed grueling. What did you get a sense of what that was like? Because it was extraordinary, it seemed.
It was grueling.
Really?
Yeah, it was a lot of bad fast food and a lot of not knowing where you were waking up the next day. But I think for them, it was amazing to watch. I mean, one of the more interesting things that's not in the film is they did have security. And we would get to know over time some of these security guys who were career guys, not, you know, definitely not all pro-gun reform guys, who would say to me, these kids have changed the way we think. These kids are going to sleep studying their facts on the next stop of what the laws are like in that city or that state, and just going and talking to people from all kinds of walks of life. So for them, it was about the real guts of grassroots work of going into towns. Some of the more interesting things when they talk to people their age, young people who are more conservative, and to watch them use their debate skills that they learned in school. But it was also they're still in the midst of working through and processing trauma. It's less than a year, much less than a year. And they're taking, in the case of Emma, hundreds and hundreds of photos, selfies a day. So polite about it. And it was just, you know, you watch her and go, oh my God. It's just, they were just exhausted.
Let's talk about David Hogg, a senior at the time at Marjorie Stoneman Douglas. I'd say one of the most surprising elements of the story was just how emotionally intelligent these young people were. Tell us a little bit about David.
David, in the beginning, you know, he always reminded me of Spock, you know.
Wow.
In Star Trek a little bit. You know, this, you know, he is so intellectually gifted. And, you know, you do get the sense that they are living history and they kind of know it. And you can see it, but he's just like a mastermind of coming up with these. He's a big thinker, so he's thinking, and his brain gets really crowded. And we were in South Africa together, and Desmond Tutu was giving him this award, and we were in the airport, and he said, "Kim, there's like 25 priorities for me, and I don't know how to. I don't know what to do first. There's just too much, and I don't know whether to go to school." And so, you know, he's got a lot of the anxieties that many kids that age do. But to see, you know, the idea that these corporations were actually pulling out and things were, and they were making them happen. And David's on his journey is trying to learn more about emotional intelligence. He's trying to. He's incredibly empathetic person, but he's also not always well-liked. And so he's grappling with that, you know, by the public. He's the one that gets the most hate.
I mean, that's an understatement. It's kind of amazing, the intensity of the hatred that's directed at all of them to some degree, but at him in particular. And I wondered, what do you make of that? Is it because they're young? And how dare they be saying these kinds of things? Was it just why the intensity? Maybe it was just the intensity of the debate itself, which brings out some pretty strong feelings.
Well, I mean, a lot of this was not new to me because of my work on Newtown, but more shocking because they are young. I think that there is just this true belief by a contingent of people that they're just pawns, and they are operatives, the crisis actors. You know, they're paid to do these things. They're so I think that the lashing out and that kind of hatred It's just so disturbing to see that turn on minors.
Yeah.
That was really hard.
Let me play a moment from one of these interactions that Cameron has with these protesters. And he's being accused, as they are in the media and at different turns we see in the film, of being manipulated by grown-ups. And this is how Cameron reacts to that idea. Here's another moment from the film.
Okay, dude, you know what, man? If I could just be real with you, you guys are being used by politics, man.
I'm sure, yeah.
You guys are being sucked into the machine.
Yeah, I bet.
They put you and all your friends on TV. See, that's, you got on the covers of magazines, and it made you feel real nice and good.
See, it
because,
did.
Because they're using you, man.
Yeah, well, here's the thing.
It's
two
not
things.
Real.
Number one, I haven't felt nice or good in a while. I'm a deeply traumatized individual. I'm just one with a purpose because I know that since I'm lucky enough to be alive right now, I have to do something to make sure that when my friend died, he didn't die in vain. So you can call us puppets all you want for, you know, coming out of a school shooting and thinking school shootings can be stopped by something. The puzzle piece that you're missing is that I put me in the media. I went out there where I knew the cameras were, and I stood in front of them and I said, you know what, let me tell you what happened right there. Because if the worst thing that could have possibly happened, happened, right? Because if you had shown me February 1st that right now I would be advocating for political policy, I would say, great, I've always wanted to advocate for political policy. If you had said, here's what it would take for you guys to get your platform, I would have said, okay, obviously not. Well, you know what? I'm living in obviously not. My reality is the obviously not. I don't know if you ever read comic books, but if you look at the alternate universes, we're in the worst one. Look, I could be at summer camp right now.
Exactly. Okay?
My initial plan was to be at summer camp, and then I was going to go for one session, then work at my comic book store and be happy, because that's what I would have wanted to do. Thing is, people are dead.
What were the reactions that... What were you noticing? Because this was the—I have to say—the reaction from the counter protesters was an important idea in the film. What were you starting to see?
Well, hopefully, people who come to see the film—I mean, visually, that's quite a scene because it's in Houston.
Yeah.
And these guys who are surrounding him are strapped with AR-15s, all over, and he's just like this. He's just like in his little shorts and trying to fend for himself. But I think what I learned a lot about that and other scenes was the teaching moment was, these conversations would sometimes go on for 40 minutes and longer. So there was this sense of watching and thinking, oh my God, the patience. And I thought the same attributes and skills that those teenagers use a lot that can drive you crazy, like, give me the keys to the car, I want to go to the party. They like use them for good.
Yeah.
And you know, and suddenly you're like, I would have been out of there in like 3 minutes with that guy, and you know he's still there and he's just patiently so I think the teaching moment was about civil discourse.
Yeah.
They were never outright rude. And they were respectful. They got their points across, and they really learned this is a technique. A lot of them did, learn this in debate classes. And so that's really what I took away was, yes, we're a divided country, but the civil discourse is possible, even with these people. And David will say, people just want to be heard.
The sources of those people's like anger, it's pain that they feel because they feel misunderstood and misconstrued. The reason they're counter-protesting is because they don't think we're gonna go out there. They don't think that we care about what they have to say. We care about what everybody has to say. People feel like they aren't heard.
There's another moment I want to play, and this was in another exchange. This was this time David with a group of counter-protesters, also armed to the teeth. This was in Dallas, I think, this time. And they're talking to these protesters, and the question comes up about having armed security guards, maybe even volunteer security guards. These counter-protesters are saying, we need to have more guns, in fact, in these schools, not fewer. And David's trying to make the point that it's not a good idea. And the conversation is so interesting because it's really civil. And I think that's what's remarkable about this exchange. The man that you'll hear at the end of this clip
sounding reasonable and accommodating is one of these kind of really right-wing gun rights protesters. Here's David Hogg from the film Us Kids.
It's a very tough conversation to have because putting a firearm in a situation in general can mean someone else dies, and it that can be the bad guy and that can be the good guy, or just an innocent bystander. Any of you that have been in a shooting, you can understand that. Those 150 hours of training mean nothing in that one split second.
Well, it's because you don't rise to the occasion, you fall to your most basic level of training.
Exactly. You know, and no amount of training can train you out of that instinct, and that's my biggest reluctancy to specifically putting more guns in schools, which I'm sure you guys can understand.
I mean, I don't necessarily agree with it, but I respect your opinion. That's fine.
Isn't it better to give people the liberty to at least try to defend themselves? Isn't that more preferable than taking my defensive tools and my liberties away from me?
That's what I asked them, and they said they're not anti-gun. They're just for common sense, whatever. They're literally not trying to take guns away from them. That's what I hear anyways. But, you know, you hear a lot of things from inside.
And we hear a lot from your side, too.
Why this is what creates America. This is what America's about. Coming together. Come on. Can I shake your hand?
So they're shaking hands at this moment, seem to be getting along. Would you just talk about that moment? I thought it was kind of remarkable because they didn't end up agreeing, but they sort of seemed to be hearing each other. And I thought that was, in this time now, kind of amazing, actually.
Being there, I absolutely think that was real and authentic, that exchange. It certainly wasn't for the camera. There were a lot of people around, and we were sort of back. But I think there's a backstory that David wouldn't mind me sharing, which is that it's a larger thing right now when we think about what happened in Charlottesville, about where is that line where you... And David's grappling with that a lot.
Yeah.
Where is the line where you engage and you talk to people? And where's the line where you say, I don't want to talk to those people? And in that scene, he later learns that some of those guys were Proud Boys or, very much affiliated with white supremacist groups and, you know, had a conversation with me about, you know, I don't think I would have spoken to them, even though he said, I want to speak to everyone. So he's grappling with that, which is what I think we're dealing with so much as a country right now. Is where that line is, and is it possible to listen and to, you know, where is that gray area? And I do think, I'm an optimist in some ways, but I do think that right now there is so much more gray in this country and so much more ability for people to have the kind of conversations they did.
Do the kind of inevitable effects of trauma start to affect these kids, do you think? I mean, I think we see that in the film. And what do you think the impact is? Because you start to see... there were times when I wondered if they regretted going on that bus journey, if they regretted the scope of the things that they were attempting in some ways because they didn't comprehend the effect of this that this trauma may be having on them.
I think it was hard for them, a lot of us in the middle of trying to do something Herculean, they definitely had times where it was just too much, and it does have effects and it alters a certain. I don't want to give away too much some of their actions, but I think it's like David. It says it once at one point. I never feel like I've given too much. I feel like I've never given enough. David in particular, when you ask about him, he's a kid that's always sort of saying, you know, seeing his flaws, seeing the flaws of what they've done, of the movement, seeing the mistakes and saying, we have to learn from our mistakes, we have to do better. So he's just pushes himself and, relentless that way.
So what difference did all that make, do you think? What difference did... That bus trip, what difference did that, those marches, I mean, as you reflect back on it now?
I watched turnouts in places like Sioux City and Salt Lake City, just near here, I mean, that were just remarkable. It really was like Field of Dreams. It was like Build It, and people were just, I mean, some of the moments were like 102-degree weather in Albuquerque where my crew would run on and to run it somewhere over there where the event was happening, and you'd see like a family, and these like little, it was the little ones that got to me, the 10-year-olds would say, it was like the Beatles had come. Right. And these 10-year-olds would be like, Mom, hurry, you know, they started in Chicago and they're here, and you know, we have to get there. And you saw these kids being inspired and like mesmerized, and you know, and I thought, this is like the American Idols of 10 years ago. These kids now want to be like Emma. You know, they want to, that's cool. So that's, I think that's huge in terms of what we can look forward to with a generation that wants to be more engaged, more involved. And I think, you know, there's empirical data about what they affected in the midterms, and I think it's a lot of forecasting of what can happen this summer into the fall with, I mean, their real objective is just to turn out the vote, the youth vote in particular, and to make gun violence, it is a top priority for a lot of young people, along with climate change and so much else. So they're, they're thinking a lot about intersectionality, and they're, I think what they did in the summer was absolutely, and the fact that they started out in a bedroom and there's 300 chapters of them is pretty remarkable.
I wanted to ask you one final thing about trauma. It's something that Sam mentions toward the end of the film, talking about the fact that what they went through, the trauma that these students went through, that trauma dismantles you, she said. But then in some ways it gives you clarity. And it gives you a sort of different perspective. It's like it breaks you down and then builds you up in some way. Do you see that happening with these young people, that they now come out of this experience still with trauma, still with all of the issues there, I'm sure, but with a greater sense of clarity, I guess?
Absolutely. You hear them talking about having grown up, and you watched it, you know, exponentially, and things that took me, at one point, Emma said, you know, something about learning to say no. I mean, whether it is because 600 people wanted her to do something, or, you know, or we went to an ice cream store and they gave her the wrong flavor, and she was really polite, but she didn't ask. She wanted vanilla, and she said, you know, I actually asked her. She said, you know, I never used to do that. I would just, and most teenagers are reluctant. And I said, you know how long it took me to learn how to. So I think that they grow up and they've learned to have that kind of decisiveness, that kind of clarity. There's no room for the bullshit, and they just are very kind to one another. That's the other thing. They really sense that everybody gets a pass in a certain kind of a way because they've all been hurt. And that's really beautiful. There's a sense of watching them that also makes me think of the film Stand By Me. Like, there's no greater time in your life where you feel like you stick by your friends. So there's something very beautiful about seeing them and seeing them with their friends that they amass, you know, across the country from inner cities, and that they're from such different places, like Bria in Milwaukee, who sees gun violence all the time. But those relationships that they forged were really very real. They'll all be here. I'm so excited for the premiere. So they have a very special bond, and I think that was probably true in the 60s with those trips across the South, that those relationships and people knew each other for decades.
Kim Snyder, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Kim Snyder. Her documentary is Us Kids. It's part of the U.S. documentary competition at Sundance this year. She joined us in front of a live audience in Park City. Radio West is a production of KUER. You can subscribe to the show wherever you get your podcasts. And as always, we'd love to hear from you. We're on Twitter, @RadioWest. Our intern is Natu Tue. The program produced by Benjamin Bombard, Ali Vallarta, and Tim Slover. Christy Miners is our executive producer. I'm Doug Fabrizio.